You've heard me talk about Morning Kick, used by former karate champion Chuck Norris. It's a daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes similar to strawberry lemonade, and I enjoy it. I know I don't eat as many vegetables as I should, but Morning Kick has helped me make up for that, and I feel great. I have more energy and better digestion. It's an easy part of my morning routine. My wife started taking it as well. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/Harris today. We are live now on the Conversations That Matter podcast. Yeah, I'm from Boston. Podcast. I don't know why I said podcast. The Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris, like I just said, and we're having trouble on Rumble. It looks like Rumble's not streaming, so no one on Rumble's hearing me say this, I guess, but hopefully you'll come over to YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook, and I'll just upload the stream later on Rumble. So Dylan is giving me some Boston. So anyway, we have a show for you. It's not a very long show, I don't think, unless I get sidetracked or we have people who call in with questions or statements or cries of outrage. We will take those as they come. If you are a patron, you can go to patreon.com/worldviewconversation and you can find there a link to be part of the show. If you want to call in by audio or by video and talk about anything, within reason, I'm pretty game. And if I don't know, I'll just say I don't know. So I want to talk about a few issues today, just some things that have been in the news over the last week. As many of you know, I've been traveling and I'm home now, which I'm grateful to be home, although I had a great time in Wisconsin and the week before that in Idaho. It is beautiful right now. It is just, it's hard to say first or second favorite time of the year. I mean, spring is great. Fall, though, in New England, and I'm close to New England, where I live right now, is also very pretty. And winter's got its charm, too. But spring, right now, because I'm in spring, it's my favorite. So I was outside working on some things today and I haven't done one of these for a while, but I went on like a super long bike ride. I just been traveling, and I was like, I need to just kind of like debrief. That's one of the ways I can kind of debrief and focus and just stunning. I sometimes will, if you've noticed on YouTube especially, post my Happy Lord's Day pictures. If you're not on YouTube, I guess you're missing out. Yeah, those are all taken by me. 7 a.m. I usually post them. And it's usually from a bike ride I've taken or a hike I've taken or something in the Hudson Valley area. Sometimes it's different. I'll switch it up. But you're going to get one of those this coming Sunday. A great picture of the Ashokan Reservoir with some mountains behind it and just spectacular. So hope you're enjoying spring wherever you are. I have a few announcements. First, I just want to play, this is just a 1 minute quick video advertising Bradford College. And this is a great tool for homeschoolers, especially, but really anyone who wants to get a college education and wants to do it from home and you don't want the woke stuff. And there's a mentor who can help you through that process. Bradford Christian College is a great place.
Listeners, it's difficult to get a good, cost-effective education in today's world, let alone a Christian one. Thankfully, there's Bradford Christian College. You've heard me talk about Bradford Christian College in the past, how it's an accredited and affordable online-directed study program great for homeschoolers and Christians who want to give their children a college education while they're still at home. But did you know that Bradford Christian College offers 5-degree programs? You can earn a Bachelor's of Arts in Christian Leadership, Christian Counseling, Christian Education, and Theological Studies. You can also earn a Master's of Theology, which includes courses in Greek and Hebrew. Bradford Christian College offers an assigned mentor who will personally help you achieve your goals without the anti-Christian messaging you'll encounter at most secular schools and the social justice rhetoric we've all come to expect, even at most Christian colleges. Go to bradfordchristiancollege.com or email contact@bradfordchristiancollege.com. For more information, that's Bradford Christian College, com.
All right. Well, someone asking me, someone named Business, why do you call it Lord's Day and not the Lord's Day? I think I do both. I think I usually call it the Lord's Day. Did I misspeak? Did I say Lord's Day? I don't know. I thought I said the Lord's Day. Maybe I'm going to be self-conscious now. I'm going to be policing my language. So yeah, the Lord's Day. I'm cool with that. That's usually what I say. First day of the week, and we commend that day because that is the day that Christ rose from the grave, and Christians have celebrated that day and gotten together and experienced fellowship for 2,000 years. And that's why I think it's good for us to mark that day. The world sees the importance of marking up our calendar with all kinds of celebrations of victimhood and evil and other things. And I think it's good to realize at least once a week that there's God sets time, and the Lord's Day is, I think, a reminder, just even using that in my speech. That's why I use that term. Some announcements coming up. I just want to let everyone know I have added some dates to the calendar. So if you are in New York, of course, Speculator New York, even if you're not, some people actually fly from far away. Like someone came from California last year to come to our men's retreat at Camp of the Woods. It's September 27th through 29th. And that's called the Fundamentals Conference, because we're going to be getting back to the fundamentals of the faith. We're going to be talking about the history of the fundamentalist movement a little bit and what we can learn from that. We're in a different spot now, but I think we can learn from the past, and we're going to just have a great time as men fellowshipping. And you can go to fundamentalsconference.com for more. You can register there and see who's speaking. And there's just great food, great fellowship. And I really highly commend it. The people who come seem to really enjoy it. So that is, like I said, September 27th through 29th. And better to sign up sooner rather than later to make sure that we do have the room for you to come. So fundamentalsconference.com. And then, of course, if you're in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I will be at the Future of Christendom Conference, October 11th through 12th. I don't think registration's open yet. I think that's in, yeah, like I said, I guess I did write it down. So that's in Amish country, Lancaster, which is, you know, one of the things, and maybe I'll do it this time. I don't know. There's this sight and sound, they call it, this, I don't know, Christian, I've never been there, Christian play, Christian performing arts place. I don't know really what to call it, but they do plays and they do presentations and I think musicals and things. And they're in Lancaster, and a lot of Christians from my area like to go down there. I've never done it. I probably should, but that's where I'll be. So October 11th through 12th, and then October 18th through 19th, the Jesus and Politics Conference in Syracuse, Indiana, and then November 2nd through 3rd, right before the election. Hopefully I can get home. the Strong Pillars Conference in Jeffersonville, Indiana, which is right across the river there from Louisville, Kentucky. So that's as close to the South as I'm getting, at least at this point in public speaking this year. And I have several months blocked off just because I do have a baby on the way. So it's my first, and I really want to be around for that. And some people think that maybe I should just take the rest of the year off. I've decided not to do that. I'm going to start up in September. But anyway, yeah, someone says, Andrew Close, Sight and Sound is amazing. Yeah, everyone tells me that. Sight and Sound is amazing. I got to do it. So all right, let's see. I think that's my last announcement. One more, I guess, little announcement. If you want to promote this, I'm going to talk about this in an episode later this week or next week, depending on how things go. It'll probably be next week at this rate. The Inescapability of Identity Politics by yours truly on AmericanReformer.org. It is the top, or not the top, but like it's the first one you're greeted with as you go to the page right now. And this is a long form article that I wrote. It's not, you know, I think it's digestible. You can read it and get through it in 20 minutes, 15 minutes, but it might take some thinking, some processing as you're going through. And, you know, I've gotten some really good feedback on this already. I sent it to some people privately before American Reformer published it, which I'm thankful for American Reformer for publishing this. And I got some really good feedback from many of you who are patrons. The patrons got to read this first. And I have some others articles that I'm probably going to submit to patrons as well. Some of these are going to end up being chapters in my book as well. So not all of them. I want you to be able to buy the book and have some original material in there. But this is one of the ones that I just thought, this is a good standalone. I want to put this out there and for free. So you can check it out. And it really dovetails nicely with an article that CJ Engel had on American Reformer yesterday I think it's called Revolution from the Middle or something like that. But some really thought-provoking pieces lately. And of course, Zach Garris also had a great article there. And you know, they're one of the good guys. They're an organization that does good work. I'm really happy that they exist and that they're publishing some really good guys. And Zach's going to be on the program later this week, actually, to talk about his article and some PCA politics. So if you're interested in the PCA and what's happening in the PCA, you can submit. If you're on Patreon, you can just submit your questions or queries in the private chat. But if you are not, you can contact me on social media, send me a message on Facebook or something, and I will endeavor. Zach is one of the guys. Zach and Sean McGowan are like the two PCA guys that I will have on when it's time to talk PCA politics. And that's what we're going to do on Friday of this week. So, but American Reformer does great work. They publish great people. And I am glad that my article is there. And you can check it out if you don't want to wait till I talk about it next week, which I will on the podcast, and see what you think. I mean, it's a provocative title. And I think some people would react to that. But I saw that Joel Berry from Babylon Bee, I guess, really liked it, which was great. And Megan Basham told me that she really liked it. So so we'll see where that goes. All right. Let's see. We got the numbers are climbing. We have well over 100 people now in the chat, or watching, streaming. Not all of them are in the chat, but you can be in the chat if you want and ask questions or make comments. This is going to be a little bit of an open discussion tonight. And of course, if you're a patron, patreon.com/worldviewconversation, and you can be part of the show directly if that's something you want to do. Let's get through some news stories today. Some news stories. We're going to start here with the big news. The United Methodist Church repealed a longstanding ban on LGBT clergy. And so, you know, I have some relatives. I have actually three relatives who are United Methodist pastors. And, you know, just recently I was in Mississippi, and I was in a former Methodist church, and that's where we held a service to commemorate my grandfather's life. It was a memorial service, and the wives of, I guess, I'm not sure exactly how it works. I think she's my second cousin. I get confused with the once removed and all of that, but my dad's cousin, she's married to one of these Methodist preachers, and we were just talking about the fact, or she I guess told me that, hey, this church isn't Methodist anymore. They left. And it was over the LGBT stuff. But then she made the point that, hey, if the conservative churches leave, what are they left with? And this is one of the things I've seen in the SBC. This is like the crew had the same argument, people in crew, that when the organization seems to be making some serious blunders, like not just flirting with heresy, but actually adopting it into their statement of faith, that conservatives are somehow in the denomination, Orthodox believers are somehow expected to hang on. And I don't know where the help comes from. That's the question I have. And that's one of the things, hopefully I'll talk to William Wolfe about this. We've been trying to get a date together to talk about his efforts in the SBC. This is one thing I want to talk to him about and just say, well, you know, what's the line? Like, at what point in an ecclesiastical institution do you say, you know what, we're not doing ministry. We're just spending our time fighting the left. And it's a worthy debate. I've had my conclusions on it for a while. I think it's no surprise to people out there that I would say, if you're in the Methodist church, get out. And I, you know, leave all that, leave all the money, leave all the, I know, I get it. I mean, I wish it wasn't the case, but we have to deal with reality. And that's what I have always come back to. We have to deal with reality. So reality is you're funding your demise if you stay in. Reality is you are having fellowship with darkness if you attend the Methodist gatherings that include now LGBT pastors. And this is perfectly fine. I mean, this has been going on for a while, but now it's something that's actually acceptable in some fashion. So the article talks about the United Methodists repealed their church's longstanding ban on LGBTQ clergy. Shock me. Yeah. With no debate on Wednesday, removing a rule forbidding self-avowed practicing homosexuals from being ordained as appointed as ministers. And the vote was 692-51. 692-51. So this is how the left works. They just push, 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 push. They lose and they're not discouraged. They keep going. And I know there's some conservatives who want to try to, can we reverse this? Can we use the same kind of logic ourselves? And one of the big, I think, barriers to this is the left is capable of being dishonest in the way that they operate. They will come at you as an angel of light. They will try to convince you they are on the same side as you. They're orthodox. They just want a little bit here, a little bit there, give and take a little. And then when the true colors come out, then it's too late. And this is one thing that as Bible-believing Christians, we can't do. We're not going to be dishonest. We can be shrewd. We can be very wise about how we approach things, but we're not going to be presenting ourselves as something we're not in order to, at least in this context, in an ecclesiastical situation with churches, with people who are supposed to be brothers and sisters in Christ partnering for ministry, we're not going to tell them that our theology is one thing when it's not, right? So anyway, I don't really know if there's a point to reading more of this. I mean, it's kind of over. And if anyone watched the videos from the Charlotte Convention Center, they will notice that there was very little pushback. There was at least one guy who from Africa who was trying to plead with the United Methodist Church. I made a comment on X and said, hey, here's the last pastor in the United Methodist Church, kind of jokingly. But a lot of these people came up, these delegates, and they said things like, you know, I'm so-and-so, and I'm a white heterosexual male, and my pronouns are he, him. And, you know, this is like baked into the culture. And you get the impression, you watch these people, so many of them, you're like, okay, like, I don't want to stereotype inappropriately, but you probably listen to NPR, don't you? And you probably are very involved in your public library, including attending Drag Queen Story Hour, you know? And you're like, there's just this stereotype. I don't know how to, I don't know why I see that, but I do. And there's more I could say, but I'll get in trouble. But it's, you can see the kinds of people that are running your denomination and you're like, it's over. It's over. Dylan asks for $9.99. Thank you, Dylan. How can we use the left's long-term strategy with, for example, United Methodist Church to win? So how can we use their, so, I mean, I think I just kind of addressed this. I don't know that we can use their same exact strategy. We can be wise. Wise as serpents, innocent as doves. I was just recently speaking in Idaho, and we were talking about politics and the abortion issue. And on that issue, which I see it a little different, I did suggest, you know, basically trying as hard as you can every time you have the ability to push for the life issue, to push for, they call it in the abolitionist crowd, equal protection, but I would just say outlawing murder, making sure that it's outlawed. And you get as far as you can possibly go. And then when you don't make it, you lock in whatever gains that you've made. And then the next time you push even farther. And the left does this all the time with, we have so far to go whenever they win. They're never happy. We can be happy because we actually, I think, have more concrete goals. Like once murder is outlawed, we're happy. The left has this nebulous kind of, we got to come up with a state of inclusion and equity, diversity. And like, if we don't get to that utopia, which they'll never get to, we're not happy, but we have actual stated tangible goals. So that's in a political context. In an ecclesiastical context, I do see it different in this way. You can do that, but you, like, it's inescapable that you're in a political society. You're sharing society with other people. You're engaging in the marketplace. Despite what the Amish think, you can't really fully secede from society like 100%. Like, you can't be so separate that it doesn't affect you at all. And you know, you're totally, because then you're not even in society at all. We have to be in the world. We're not of the world, but it's also just inescapable. There's services that we're going to be using. We're going to be rubbing shoulders with people for business purposes. We're going to be living with neighbors, and decisions that they make affect us, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. So that's inescapable. And so I think we should still be honest in the political realm as we operate, but we don't have a choice. If we're in a liberal state, we're going to have to live in that state and figure out the best way to live as much as possible while pushing for righteousness. When you're in an ecclesiastical body, though, you're not forced to be there. You have the option to take yourself out from under that. And so it's a voluntary association in that way. So you can try to be independent. I realize in the UMC, it's much harder than the SBC because easier in the SBC because you're independent already. In the UMC, they may own your building, the denomination. You may have to find a separate place to meet. You may have to buy the building from the denomination. There's things like that. But you can't be, this is what I think you can't be doing. You can't be staying there, giving your resources and your time to things that the Lord considers evil when your stated purpose is to be cooperating for ministry. That's mission drift, and you're engaging in it once that that becomes the thing. If you're honest about it, I suppose, if you say, well, this is what I'm here for now, this is the new purpose, I want to right the ship, at least you're being honest with yourself, but this is also a drain of resources, and you got to establish whether that's a positive drain. And if they have any authority over you, which you can't tell me they don't, even in the SBC, there's a level of authority that these missions groups and even the convention when it meets, even the resolution that they make, they do have some authority. They'll say that it's not binding authority, but there is a hierarchy there. There is an example set. And the sheep in your church, if they ever look at the denomination that they're under, they're going to see these things. And if they go to an SBC school or if they become a missionary in the SBC, they're going to be seeing some of these compromises. So, you know, even there, I do think there's leadership concerns. And I think there's a lot of wisdom and prudence that comes to play in this. You know, maybe you have a bad president for a year and can we stick this out? But when you have the pattern we've been seeing for now over a decade of bad, in my opinion, bad presidents in the SBC who have appointed members to these various trustee groups that have now pushed the institutions in a bad direction, then I don't think it's wise. And I know there's people who disagree with me, but I don't think it is. And with the UMC, I don't think it's wise. It's like subjecting your family. If you put it on that level, like if you subjected your family to, like, I'm going to send my kids to public school because there needs to be a Christian witness there. And like, you have the option not to. Now, if you're forced to, if you're in a Soviet country, like if you rewind 40 years of Soviet Union, you have to send them, or even Germany today, I think it's, you know, you have to send them, then you don't have the option and, you know, you make do. But when you do have the option, then that's not a wise decision generally for parents to make for their children, right? And it's not the same in every way, but I do see a parallel there for denominational life. So that's my take on it. And I don't know. The answer is, I don't know. The Reconquista thing that Redeem Zoomer pushes, you know, I'll just say this. One of the guys that, and I'm friends with them, who's kind of the big, like, here's our guy. Here's the guy who's going to be part of Operation Reconquista in the Episcopalian Church. He just left for a more conservative denomination. It didn't work out. And most of the time it doesn't, because you're asking so much of people to subject themselves to bad theology, to a life of, they're enlisting in a battle that they don't need to be fighting. That they're going to your church as a refuge for rest, for accountability, for using spiritual gifts, for leadership from the pastor. And you're asking them to forego those things in order to carry out a long-term goal of winning some political battle inside these churches. And it doesn't suit the purpose of why you go to church. And that's why it doesn't seem to work out. I think the same thing will play out in these other denominations if they keep getting bad. You know, the PCA is one of these denominations that seems to be like teetering, but it seems like it kind of comes back from the brink. It's like, and it could kind of go either way. Like, we're going to find out. It's slow moving. Maybe that's a good thing. We'll find out in years to come what happens. But the SBC, in my estimation, and some disagree, but it's over the hump. I think that the UMC is well over the hump. There should really be no debate there. So I don't think it's a suitable endeavor to try to save these denominations in the same way the left corrupted them, unfortunately. I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but you have to start something else, and you have to guard it with your life, guard it from being taken over. Other organizations that aren't ecclesiastical, yeah, I think you can. I think you can operate in at least, you know, in honest ways that are aggressive, but honest. And because there's a political purpose, there's an understanding there that the reason you're going is for that. And I think it's one of the reasons Boy Scouts is where it is. We'll talk about that in a minute too. A lot of comments are coming in about this as I give my opinion, my unscripted opinion. Speak your mind, brother. James Gordon says it's your show, and that's why most are here. Truth rules the day every day. Thanks, John. Appreciate that. Hopefully I did. I do want to make room for people who differ with me on secondary or tertiary issues at times, because I appreciate them. That's why I do that. They are sustaining members of the NPR. talking about the UMC people. Yeah, yeah. If you ever listen to like some of these NPR shows and stuff, they'll be like, we only exist on your donations. There's not, you know, they sound like they're hanging on by a thread, and they're very soft, whispery voices. You are usually a mouse fighting a gorilla. That's true, Matt says, in some of these denominations. All right, let's talk about what other good news do I have? Well, it's not good news. A lot of what I have, I'm just going to be honest, a lot of it's drift news. So we got a statement, God's call to action against racism and poverty in 2024. And I thought when I saw this, that's so 2020. But there's some people who put this together. And should I read it or should I just tell you who signed it? Let me read a little bit. Okay. Racism is getting worse. Our nation has a history and legacy of racism. I mean, you've all heard this. I don't even need to read it. You know exactly what's coming next. There's prominent leaders who have made statements that escalate the fear of I guess minorities have. The Supreme Court ended affirmative action. 14 states passed legislation to restrict voting. There have been some there's been progress on criminal justice reform at the federal level, but there's 10 states that have taken steps to address mass incarceration. Oh, let's see here. Despite widespread protests, police reforms have been modest. Well, it sounds like it's going in their direction, but it's not going fast enough. Communities of color continue to suffer exceptionally high rates of gun violence. Yeah, well, I mean, you look at those numbers, though, and is that racism? What is that? So it's usually black-on-black crime, a lot of this. Hate crimes increased in 2022, with two-thirds of them targeting racial and ethnic groups. This is just, like, matching up different, like even that just last one I read. Like, how mismatched is this? Communities of color continue to suffer exceptionally high rates of gun violence, and then it's coupled with hate crimes increased in 2022. What are you supposed to assume? Oh, it's the hate crimes that are doing it, when in reality, it's not the hate crimes that are doing that. It's the fact that the economy is terrible, for one thing, and that probably doesn't help. But but ultimately, there's a sin issue in these mostly inner city areas where you have gang violence. And that really has nothing to do with, quote unquote, hate crimes, at least the ones that they're thinking about. Poverty has increased. Yeah, well, maybe we should vote for Trump. That might help that. So, all right, I'm going to save my sarcasm and my mocking comment, my holy mocking. How they do quote scripture. We pray for all those who are in authority. So they at least quoted scripture there. And they quoted Matthew 25, the least of these. Jesus said that we are to treat the least of these how we treat Christ himself. Racism is in conflict with a biblical teaching that we are all made in the image of God. Okay, it's all the usual, like, Russell Moore type stuff. And, they want Congress to take bipartisan action on voting rights, gun violence, discrimination against racial, ethnic, and religious minorities. You know, they're doing that now with the Anti-Semitic Awareness Act. Now, it's kind of a question, open question now, if that passes, are there certain passages in scripture that are now, quote unquote, anti-Semitic? I mean, this is terrible. Even Ben Shapiro's against it, which tells you it's really bad if that's the case, because he's pretty the flag he waves, right, is opposing anti-Semitism. Quote unquote. And of course, if he's against it, you know, it's got to be pretty bad. So the signatories of this, not a surprise. We got some people from the Methodist Church, but let me see if there's names I recognize here. We got Eugene Show. I recognize that name. President and CEO, Bread for the World. Why do I recognize Eugene Show? Why do I recognize that name? Wasn't he the Stop Asian Hate guy? Where did I see? Was he Gospel Coalition? I've got to look this up now. Why do I recognize that name? I don't actually know now why I recognize that name. I definitely have talked about him, though, in the past. So he's got his own Wikipedia page. So, all right, I probably shouldn't get on a big tangent about this. I think it must have been the Stop Asian Hate thing. He likes to do statements, if that's true. Micah Edmondson, pastor, Koinonia Church. Micah Edmondson, who I believe is that... I don't want to speak out of turn here. Gospel Coalition guy. Okay, so he is a Gospel Coalition guy. I want to say he's the nephew or the son-in-law of someone else, but I can't confirm. I don't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, gospel. So you got a gospel coalition guy here. We got, let's see, other people I recognize. A lot of these people aren't like big names, but they are because you got like a mixture of people that are in the more left evangelical, quote unquote, church. I don't even know how you like keep these separate exactly. But and then you got like the sojourners types who are more far left and they're kind of mixing here. And the modern sojourners types, I mean, I'm familiar with the 60s, 70s guys. A lot of the modern guys, you know, I'm not reading Sojourners, so I wouldn't recognize a lot of them. But a lot of pastors here. I'm not seeing too many evangelical red flags coming up. I recognize Walter Kim. That's why, because he's the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. That's why I recognize him. Kind of a major organization there. Yep, in evangelicalism. And Jim Wallace from Sojourners, of course. Of course he would sign this. So I don't know that this is like a huge major thing, but it just shows you that the statement thing, this is one of the things, and maybe someone can weigh in on this that has a thought, because I really wish I knew what the purpose of these is. I know what the purpose is, but like why people think they're effective. I remember right after Trump was elected, there were so many statements. 4 years of statements. And in 2020, it was like the floodgates open and everyone's making a statement about everything in regards to social justice. And we've seen that cool off a little bit. Evangelicals aren't making as many statements, but then this is another statement. And, you know, what are they hoping to accomplish? That's my, like, I guess this pushes. I mean, and there's times to make statements, but it's so overused. That's my thought. That's why what I wonder. It's so saturated. What do you think this is going to do exactly? But it was maybe they just want people like me to talk about it. Maybe I'm serving that purpose by shining a light on it. I don't know. Equilter says, I'm currently attending an SBC church in Virginia as it's the only church that I can get a ride to. Do I quit going to an SBC church and not a fellowship? I'm 77 on a small fixed income and no car. Well, that's a really good question. There's so many factors to weigh in there. And I would love to say, I know everything about your situation. I don't. But just because you're going to an SBC church, first of all, does not mean those people know exactly what's happening on the higher levels. Some of them might, but they might not. It also, it's possible they're not funding it to the extent that it's making a big difference. So I think it's like $13 a year or $18 a year. You can get your giving down that far and still remain in the SBC. And that's really, if you're going to remain, that's what you need to shoot for. So if you got a good pastor, if you got a good church and they just have this historical tie and they're ignorant about what's going on, it's probably wise to try to educate them, give them resources. You could give them, in fact, I have here, probably, you know, start with this, give them this book. And give your pastor the book and just see what he says. And there's a study, you know, online about it. And it's got a bunch of stuff about the SBC. I'm putting out some more stuff about the SBC soon, but find some resources. Go to Conservative Baptist Network, see what they have to say. I don't know. You could probably just at this point go on YouTube and type in SBC compromise, and there's going to be something. So that's number one. If there's a confrontation or if there's exposure to the truth and it's rejected, then you have a harder decision to make. But if your options are really limited, then your options are limited. it's like the public school example I brought up. If you're forced to do it and prudence dictates it's better to do that than to die or to go to jail so your kids have no parent, then you do it. And you know, I was thinking about this recently because there's a church. Now maybe I should scratch that. Let me leave it in the hypothetical realm. There's a church, hypothetically, that is in the SBC and they're super conservative and they're fighting and they send delegates every year. And the question was, would I ever be willing to attend a church like that? And I thought, I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because there would have to be a condition in place. And the condition is that you're not going to be in the SBC that long unless some miracle happens and the ship is righted. But I would have to have a hard conversation with the pastor about like, okay, so how long you planning on staying in? What do you want to see? What's like what kinds of things, like if it's just a blank check and we're going to stay in and go down with the ship, then I'm not going, you know? So with the UMC, it'd be a lot easier for me because that's totally gone in every respect. And I have less tolerance and patience, I suppose, for people, even though I probably have some in my family, but I just like, as much as I love them, I would just disagree and be like, there's no, the ship's not coming back. Like it's done. So, I'm not going there. I'm not going to be putting my offering towards that. I'll start a new church if I need to, but you know, the UMC is not an option. So that's the best advice I guess I have is you got to come up with some conditions. One of the things I always tell people is ask yourself whenever choosing a church, if you had a family, even if you don't, but hypothetically, if you did, would you want them to be exposed to the kinds of leadership and the kinds of things that they'd be exposed to at that church? And, you know, let's say you died and your family's there, your kids are being raised and spiritually guided by people in that church. Would you be comfortable with that? Would that be the church you would be willing to go and die at if you had an accident? You know, that makes the situation a little bit rubber meets the road, more applicable. So, yeah. And John Gordon says the SBC is a far cry from where the UMC went this week. Absolutely. And hopefully I made that distinction there. The UMC is like, they're absolutely done. The SBC, I just think, is over the hill. And I think they've been over the hill for the last 3 years. They're not teetering though. They're pushing. They seem to like do the two steps forward, one step back. They're progressively moving towards the left. Conservatism is driving the speed limit. Yes. It's liberalism driving the speed limit. That is true, Mr. Perry says. Okay. Other stories that I want to talk about. Just some things I wanted to, I took note of as I was looking today on social media. Megan Basham talked about the Trinity Forum and the National Association of Evangelicals, who apparently the signatory from the president is on the statement I just read, that they are now promoting LGBTQ activists to teach Christians how to engage in public life and civic discipleship. One reason that they're doing this, she says, is that they have received a $700,000 grant from a Buddhist billionaire, Pierre Omidyar, who is the founder of eBay. Now, why bring this up? Well, it's just the drift in all our institutions, and it's caused by multiple factors. It's not just money, but there's outside money that's going to these things. And, you know, I wasn't aware of this one, actually. I'm generally not surprised. I knew about like what the Kern Family Foundation was doing. I knew about some of the Soros connections and open societies with the Evangelical Immigration Table. And there was another one. James Riotti. You know, I knew about his stuff in the PCA, and I didn't know about this one. So this is interesting. And just stay tuned because I will be interviewing Megan when her book comes out, and we'll talk about some of this stuff. But so Megan, you know, highlights this, that there's this overt acceptance, I would say, of just blatantly unchristian things. You have two guys here who, and she's got some screenshots, I guess, to show. This writing for Sojourners, Adam Russell Taylor, who I think is the guy on the right. Yeah, the guy on the right. Celebrates Pride Month and all the rest. He's going to teach Christians how to engage with culture. He's the guy. Yeah, right. And and this is in their best interest. It's not just that, you know, money has something to do with it, but there's a drift just because you don't want to stand out. You don't want to be the weirdo. You don't want to be the freak. You want to be accepted. You want to meet the world halfway. You don't want to be known as a bigot. You want to separate yourself from the Christian nationalists. You want to just create this impression that you are sophisticated and worthy of respect from the world. And if you can bring in someone who totally disagrees with Christian theology on a very fundamental issue that actually relates to the culture right now and have them speak on issues related to culture, man, you are open-minded. You're not one of those hateful Christians, right? We've been dealing with this forever. And it's a death by a thousand cuts. It's slowly, incrementally introducing compromise. And then the next time it's a greater compromise, and that you drift and you realize over time, wait a minute, we are nowhere near where we started. That's how it works. And So she shows this in Trinity Forum and National National Association of Evangelicals. Well, I noticed this too, and I just thought, you know, this is the other end of the spectrum here in a way. It's the same thing happening to an extent, but it's just these are names that in more conservative settings, you'd think they're solid, right? Justin Taylor from the Gospel Coalition and Carl Truman from Grove City College, writing in First Things. And here, now this is what I want to say. I've talked about Truman before, and you know, I have a, I know a lot of conservatives, when they talk about Carl Truman, they'll be like, oh, I have such a respect for Carl Truman. Like, even if they disagree, they just still have this, like, this aura surrounds Carl Truman. I was actually just recently on a flight with someone who was a Christian going to Presbyterian church, totally against the woke stuff, but you know, our church is combating this stuff by reading Carl Truman. I'm just thinking, well, you might get a few nuggets in there, but you're definitely not getting at like the heart of what's happening. And you're learning from someone who's himself compromised on this issue, because in his very backyard, where he has power to do something about it, he has defended his own institution when they were pushing the CRT stuff. So that's Carl Truman. So I just have a hard time gaining a lot of respect for someone like that. And I'm not saying he doesn't ever make good points, but this is so, in my opinion, this shows you kind of how things are framed. So this is the quote that Justin Taylor decided to take from this Carl Truman article. And it's in the name of the article is "What the Pro-Palestinian Campus Protests Are Really About." And here's the quote. You ready? "When protests are childish, inconsistent, racist, and rooted in no shared vision beyond that of mere negation, then those who participate in them should be treated with contempt." Now, you know, what's wrong with that, John? Don't you agree? Well, here's what I want to say. I don't know actually if I agree with all of this. I don't know if that's what the campus, I don't know that the campus protests are just about negation. I think they're mostly about an actual nation on the other side of the planet that they are opposing. And some of them are there, some of the participants are there just because it's a protest. That's true. But there seems to be a stated goal. Anyway, that said, I don't have like a huge problem with holding an opinion like this. Okay, so they should be treated with contempt. You should despise these people is what he's saying. These pro-Palestinian protesters or anti-Israeli protesters, whatever you want to say, you should despise them. They're deplorables. They're worthy of just vilification. It's easy to fight on that issue for these people. Yet, when it came to 2020, even those who opposed it could only do it in these circles through whispers, through gentle saying, you know, bending over backwards before they said anything condemning to say they have a point. There wasn't this hard, direct language that you're seeing now against the quote unquote Palestinian protesters. Does that bother anyone? I'd like to just suggest that is also a shift in the leftward direction. How is that a shift in the leftward direction, John? Because it is calibrating the weights and measures we use to evaluate friends, enemies, the people around us, and whether or not they are worthy of respect or whether or not they are worthy of condemnation. The people like Carl Truman, even in 2020, and I remember because I read several articles from him, people like him, they could not condemn the BLM protesters without first giving their due respect. And I'm not saying you can't do that. I'm just saying, like, well, with that issue, maybe you can't. But I'm not saying, like, hypothetically in other situations, you can't do that. Maybe there's something worthy and crowds are diverse and these kinds of things. But you make qualifications. Okay, I'm not saying you can't make qualifications. I make them. I think it's important to make them at times. But there's also times when it's appropriate to just be direct. And Carl Truman felt it was very important to be direct on this issue, which you would think shouldn't matter as much to him. You know, the Black Lives Matter issue affected his school directly. You know, even the LGBT stuff. And Carl Truman has been much better on that issue. But even when he talks about that stuff, he doesn't talk about it in the unqualified tones he's willing to use to castigate pro-Palestinian protesters. It's interesting. You know, what are we willing to fight on? What are we willing to go to bat on? That really reveals a lot about you. It shows you where the priorities are. and shows you what you're passionate about, what you think actually matters in the grand scheme. That's what you're going to put your time and your, it's where you're going to put your mouth, is towards the things that you think actually really matter. It's why this is called Conversations That Matter, because I want to talk about things I think actually matter to me. And if I started saying that, you know, I'm really, like, I started really condemning one group and, you know, a similar group and a group that, let's say, did much more harm to this audience and myself, and I was willing to give them half a pass, you would call me out. You would wonder what I'm doing. You would notice that. I'm just saying, I noticed this. And it's the same kind of thing Megan's talking about with the National Association of Evangelicals. It doesn't seem like as big of a compromise, because it's not as big of a compromise, but it is that subtle push, that recalibration. If you read Carl Truman, and that's who influences you all the time, you follow him, you yourself will start to recalibrate your own mind. And that calibration, I don't believe, reflects God's justice, to be quite frank with you. I think that it minimizes some things and maximizes other things, and when it shouldn't, when there's no justification for it. All right. Questions, comments, cries of outrage, and then we'll keep going here. So there's some discussion about whether sound churches, I guess this whole launched a whole discussion about church we should go to. That's a great discussion. I'm glad this is happening. So I'll just keep going at this point and let that discussion continue. Let's talk about, the Boy Scouts. I was going to mention this because I was a Boy Scout, and it's sad. So I used to really think that Boy Scouts, although I will say I had some challenges with the troop that I was in at times. And I had I actually eventually quit, but the scouting program itself, I actually believed in and would still believe in had they not compromised. And you have the Boy Scouts of America changing name to be more inclusive on its 115th anniversary. So yeah, it seemed to go well for 115 years, but we're going to totally upend everything. And here it's got a picture of a Boy Scout with a kerchief. I forgot what they call those, the slide on the kerchief. It's rainbow flag colored. And they are changing their name and they're rebranding. And it's just going to be called Scouting, I guess. That's all it is, Scouting. There were 1,000 young women in the inaugural class of female Eagle Scouts in 2021. The organization also began allowing gay youth in 2013. So, yeah, I mean, all this stuff happened after I got out. Our name will be new. Our mission remains unchanged. Yeah, no, not really. I mean, your mission is fundamentally changing because it was about raising men from boys to men. It was a coming of age training. And now it's you're drifting because it's not about men. You're confusing what a man is. You're confusing the responsibilities, and you're even extending these trainings to women as if they're somehow on the same level, have the same responsibilities, same function, same everything. It's egalitarian. Scouts lost a lot of members. They've lost millions of members. Membership peaked in 1972 at almost 5 million. Yeah, my dad really, he was in Boy Scouts. He really got to experience scouting in its golden age. He gets to experience it. You know, it's not that I'm jealous of the boomers, but, you know, they really had some things nice. And I get it. They had to, you know, get under their desks because they could be annihilated by a nuclear weapon at any point. So there's that. But, you know, put that on the shelf. They had some really good movies out. Entertainment was good. You know, society was cleaner. I didn't live it, but, you know, from what I hear from stories and stuff, you know, even the Boy Scouts, that was their golden age. And so it's sad. I don't even know what to tell you, except if you love scouting, it's a great program. At least it was. Join, I would say, Trail Life. Trail Life is an alternative to Boy Scouts that's trying to actually do what Boy Scouts used to do. So there you go. Someone asked me who would get my vote if I was a messenger in the SBC next month, and in the chat, and I think it's to me, and I would say Jared Moore. Jared Moore would be the one that I would ask. I don't know if actually that question was to me. The chat's talking a lot about local church attendance. We're going to talk about SBC stuff. Speaking of the SBC, so I wanted to show you this. This is an interesting thread. I'm glad Michael Clary posted this. He's been on the show before, but he posted this, and He said, some say the SBC isn't woke and there's nothing to be alarmed about. Don't be so sure. Paul said a little leaven leavens the lump. The broader SBC may not be full-blown woke, but some places are. A friend recently shared notes from a Send Philly training. See for yourself. So this would be under the North American Mission Board, and they're training church planners, and this is what they're doing. In the urban context, they say the urban context is, I guess, described as including marginalized peoples as the other. They are subject to systemic racism, system disparity, modern-day slavery, and environmental oppression. Okay, so that's what you got to understand if you're going to reach these people first. You got to understand all these things. Jesus ministry is presented as social justice crusade to empower the least of these. Huh, funny. Same verse used in the justification for the racism statement we just read. This is a misuse of that text. The least of these in Matthew 25 refers to Christians who are socially ostracized because of their faithfulness to Jesus. It doesn't teach social activism. The biblical justification they provide is simply to accept the social justice framing as valid and then quote texts where Jesus ministers to people who fit those categories. Poor, disabled, women, strangers, prostitutes, criminals. Jesus is the marginalized savior. He's got all the screenshots. Ron Sider is the one who provides the definition of biblical justice as incarnational ministry like Jesus. Ron Sider, yeah, really, they picked him. Interesting. Who, you know, wrote Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. And by the end of his life, he was just, I think he was pretty much full blown on everything. I think the LGBT stuff, he wasn't quite there yet. I'm not sure exactly, but he was, he was pretty on the left and inspired people like Russell Moore and David Platt. What does this kind of incarnational ministry look like in practice? Opposing systemic oppression. I keep saying systemic oppression. Protests, events, recognizing inequity, using your power, privilege to be a voice, advocate for the oppressed. So preaching the gospel is barely acknowledged. Like you are in the SBC and you think you're giving your money to organizations that are teaching the gospel and making disciples of Jesus Christ. And then you find out that in the training materials for some of these entities, they are teaching social activists to go out there and do a political thing. That's exactly what you have with this urban ministry boot camp curriculum. This was a recent, it looks like the copyright, it was made in 2019, but this is recent. And it was, the author is Dr. Kyle Canty, who has a doctor of ministry, Send City Missionary for Philadelphia. So there you go. There you go. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about in the SBC? Kevin Ezell, my good friend Randy C. Davis has articulated some very important points to consider as we prepare for Indianapolis. Now, Kevin Ezell would be over Send, I guess, technically, because he's the president of the North American Mission Board. And Randy C. Davis is very concerned indeed in the Baptist and Reflector about the law amendment. Oh my goodness. And so he gives all his reasons. We've gone over this kind of stuff before, so we're not going to waste your time with it, but this is that scary amendment that would give the Credentials Committee the authority to oust churches if they disagree with the Southern Baptist Convention's understanding of what a pastor is, and they put female pastors in that role. Excuse me one second, because I hear a lot of noise outside my door. I'm just going to close the door. Give me one second. All right. I usually have the door closed anyway, but I wanted some airflow. It's been kind of a warm night. And so I think my wife's vacuuming or something in the other room. Kind of late to do that, right? It's like almost 10:30 here, but she's been working hard outside all day as a pregnant woman too, which I just got to say, I'm very, very grateful for her. So let's just keep going. We got some immigration stuff and then we'll end it. I saw Freedom Center at Liberty University posted this, but hundreds of protesters marched through Dublin City Center holding signs against immigration into Ireland. This was huge. It was just, I don't know how many people were there, but it was a lot. They blocked traffic. It was a big, big, big deal. And a few months. So this is, this was 17 hours ago, the story came out. And there's been a series of protests. The Irish police cleared a tent city of unhoused asylum seekers recently. This sounds like what we're going through in the United States. It talks about this situation where there's an Algerian man who stabbed several people outside a school in the capital. That was last year. Irish government has proposed to send some of those arriving across the border back to face British authorities, but the UK government has refused to discuss the proposal. I mean, this is just a mess. So this is going on in Ireland, and I saw that there was, oh, I don't think I put it up. I just thought this was really great. This was at CPAC, which I'm not a big fan of CPAC, but this was CPAC Europe. And they had, I don't know if I can, oh, Eva of Lardingerbroek, I think is her name. And this is what she had to say.
Let me walk you through the past 7 days in Europe. This week in Stockholm, three elderly women in their 70s were stabbed in broad daylight on the streets. In London, four people were stabbed in a time span of just 42 hours. In Paris, hundreds of Afghan migrants took to the street to riot. And in Brigello, also in France, yet another church was burned down to the ground. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is just a few incidents in just a couple of days on our beautiful continent. But we all know that these incidents aren't incidents anymore. If there's one thing that's for sure, is that we know, and our governments also know, that there is a link between mass migration and crime. In the Dutch city of Dordrecht, something interesting happened the other day. They announced, and this is a small city in the Netherlands, in my home country, that a new asylum center will be put in that little town. And what did the municipality do? They said, we are going to offer citizens who live in the vicinity of this center 1,000 euros to take extra safety measures. Our new reality in Europe consists of frequent rapes, stabbings, killings, murders, shootings, even beheadings. But let me be clear about one thing. This did not used to happen before. This is a newly imported problem. Samuel P. Huntington predicted this over 25 years ago when he wrote, and I quote, "In the new world of mass migration, the most pervasive, important, and dangerous conflicts will not be between the social classes. They will not be between the rich and the poor. They will be between peoples belonging to different cultural entities. Tribal wars and ethnic conflicts will occur within civilizations." Well, boy, was he right. And the worst part is, we as a society seem to have become indifferent to it.
Okay, I'm going to stop it right there. There's much more that she says, but I'm watching this and I'm seeing that, you know, Ireland has these protests. I don't think everyone's indifferent, but enough people, I suppose, are. They're letting it happen. And I've just been in Idaho. I've just been in Wisconsin. And one of the things, it's not a surprise to many of you, but New York City is a problem. Like, they've taken in, the mayor of New York is freaking out about how many migrants. They don't have the room. They don't have the space. And, you know, I hear everywhere I go, they're getting $2,000 a month. They're getting $2,600 a month, plus this, plus that, plus they get cell phones paid for. They got, and it's everywhere I go. And, you know, in Boise, I thought this is the heartland of America, right? This is a community, a state with a small population. And I saw, based on 2 years ago I was there, a different Boise in some ways than the Boise that's there now. They have government housing going in everywhere. And it's not, quote unquote, government housing like HUD. Like, the government's not building it. It's they're paying contractors to build it, and they have to. I mean, if they don't want to be outcompeted, they're going to do it. And then they pay for people to live there on the government dole. And these are mainly, from what I understand, these are migrants, and they're dumping migrants in Boise, Idaho. to the point that I guess the Uber and Lyft business, someone who told me this out there, Uber and Lyft are just saturated with people that are immigrants trying to make a living. And their only reason they can do it is because they're essentially given enough to do, they're set up to do this. I don't know exactly how and how all the mechanism works, but that's happening. When I went to Wisconsin, of course, flying into Minneapolis to get there, there's a large immigrant population there. But I asked people in the area, I was in a rural area, you know, what's going on? I sat across from lunch from a guy who said, it's happening. It's starting here. And the contractors, you know, they're hiring migrants to do work. And it's like this is happening across the entire West at the same time. Like it's coordinated, clearly, like everyone's doing this at the same time. Even if it's not a smoke-filled room, at least there's some shared ideology or something that's inspiring the leaders to do this. And I think I know why. I think a lot of it has to do with entering a post-racial, post-nationalist, post-whatever world where it's diverse, post-religion, you know, one religion identifying a certain people group. You know, we're going to just be multiculturalism heaven, and it's turning into multiculturalism hell. And the idea has been, if we could just get rid of the borders, if we could just get rid of all these things, then these differences, people would just realize that everyone's a lot like them. Yeah, we do have some shared things. There's also a lot of particularity. There's a lot of differences. And I fear the same thing. It's like you could have put that speech that that I just played for you. You could have put that in many different contexts. You could have that she should could have been giving the speech in Dallas. She could have been giving the speech in New York. She could have been probably in almost every country in Europe giving that speech. I don't know what the solution is, to be quite frank. You know, as someone who's, I mean, I know what it is if someone had power, but if you don't have power to make decisions in your government, if you can't acquire it quickly, I don't know what the solution is. If you could acquire power quickly, I mean, I think, what did Donald Trump say? It's going to be the largest mass deportation effort ever in U.S. history. Frankly, I don't even know if he has the guts for it. That is going to be hard. I don't have any confidence in the Republicans. I mean, to save this country, to keep some kind of American people, I mean, now it's peoples, but to keep some kind of semblance of any shared culture whatsoever, you would have to make some very, very hard choices that I wouldn't want to be the one to making. And it would be a lot of social turmoil, and it's going to take some hard things. You're going to probably have to go around Congress. You're probably going to have to realize that the Democrats don't play by the Constitution. And if you were in that position to save the country, you would probably have to realize we're post-constitutional. I don't like saying this stuff, but I'm dealing with political reality here. If you're in Europe, same thing. If you don't have any power and no way to get power, then you only have really one option. And that is to, in your local area, resist it as much as you possibly can. That means to get together on the local, you know, be doctrine of the lesser magistrate, get together with local neighbors, if that's what it takes. And this is what happens in places like South Africa. What do? They, when you have a large population that is so different from you and in effect is more prone to crime, you end up having these gated communities that you have to sign community covenants, and there's restrictions to get in. And it's not the kind of America that we want to live in, but it's the kind of America that some people are already living in. And it's the kind of America that's coming. And it's because of a series of very poor choices over the course of decades that has gotten us here. One of the reasons I wrote the article that I did was because of this, about that, you know, on American Reformer right now. I think the Christian nationalism thing is, honestly, let me just be frank with you and straight with you, okay? I've never said this on the podcast. I do see in the future, maybe I have said this, but it was probably a while ago that I said this. I do see the potential in the future with the way that white people, people of European descent in the United States, but I think this goes for Europe, the way that the people who are living in these regions. And actually, I can include, I think in this country, I can include some Black people in here as well, who've been here for a long time that are now competing with these immigrant groups for limited resources in urban areas, especially that's starting. I can say that there is this possibility of a coalition forming based upon that shared identity as the result of the attacks against it. There's a balkanization. So this is like something that I think it just naturally happens. It's like, if you want to be against it, it's like being against the weather. Like if you choose peoples or people to hate, and you're going to use the power of the government against them, and you're going to terrorize them, essentially. I mean, maybe that's too strong of a word, but we might be coming to that, but you're going to oppose them in horrific ways, putting unvetted populations next to them that are prone towards crime and so forth. You're going to get a shared experience. They're going to look at themselves and they're going to see a shared experience, a common destiny that they're wrapped up in with other people in a similar plight. And that is going to produce a shared identity. And this is what I think Christian nationalism has been about in some ways. It's always called white nationalism. It's always called white supremacy and all of this. The reality is, though, the Christian nationalist thing is an alternative to much of that. It's trying to say, coalesce around a shared Christianity. Rally around a shared religion, shared Christianity. Make that the rallying point. That's the shared thing. And Christians are also attacked. So I don't agree with, I think Doug Wilson said something recently. I don't agree with Doug Wilson that this is all, so you can just reduce this kind of down to this is an attack on Christianity, all the anti-white stuff. I think there legitimately is an anti-white thing going on, like anti-Western civilization, European culture and that kind of thing. The Christian nationalism movement has been a response to a lot of things that have happened in the last few years, but it's with the understanding that that's the rallying point. So it's not making quote-unquote genetic differences in the rallying point. It's making religion the rallying point. And if you on the left who are very concerned about quote-unquote white nationalism, you should be pretty positive, in my opinion, about the Christian nationalism stuff to some extent. You should look at that as this is opposing some of the same things, but it's not doing so in the way that you say is the worst thing imaginable, which will give us Nazis and stuff, which I don't know that I buy that, but that's, you should be positive towards it. And I'm spitballing at this point, but I'm really just looking at reality and I'm saying there's a whole lot of problems coming our way. And I think there's going to be a whole lot of racial strife, and it's engineered. It is engineered. And we're going to be hearing from the Christian elites how, just get used to it, how terrible we are for not wanting the mass immigration, or at least the consequences of it in our neighborhoods and in our families, and for being for mass deportations and hard measures to end this problem. It's not hatred for anyone. That's the thing. It's just love for what you have, for your community, for the safety it enjoyed, for the people that live there, for the children that you have. I'm thinking in these terms more and more as I have a kid coming, like, okay, what's the world going to look like? How do I set this kid up so that they're going to be able to thrive, not just survive? And it looks bleaker and bleaker. I'm going to have a white kid, right? And if it's a male, oh my goodness. You know, what kinds of, the deck is stacked. And this is the kind of thing that will produce what the left says they fear the most, but they're engineering it. And so it's in America, I think this is like the last train. And I'm not saying it every year. It's like the most important election every time there's an election year. But if the Democrats have four more years on the national level to bring in permanent majorities, you can say bye to the abortion issue. You can say bye to any issue you care about because the Democrats will run the table. It'll be like California is now, a one-party state. I really believe that. I think you give them four more years, I think that's what happens. So do with that what you will. I think there's only one option. at least on a political level, and at the same time begging for the Lord's mercy. So if that didn't offend you, I really appreciate this. Dylan for $19.99. Thank you, Dylan. Congrats on the baby. Let us know if you need help, and we are here. That is so gracious of you, Dylan. Thank you. Thank you. We always need help. Prayer is the most important thing. I never know a time I don't need help. So the Tower of Babel story is coming up here. You know, I've been thinking about that too, with like the way that we can communicate with one another and override some of these language barriers, and the idea that we can, you know, just bring all kinds of different people with different values, with different everything. And oh, they'll share a government, they'll share a society together, and it'll be peaceful. It'll be great. That is the Tower of Babel mentality. Totally. That's exactly what we're dealing with today. No, particularity is part of God's order. Acts 17, right? He made not just the nations, but the boundaries for them. That's part of his created order. And we should work to preserve that, preserve an order. It doesn't mean that there aren't organic changes that happen where nations, new nations form. And I mean, like the Samaritans is a nation that can kind of a hybrid, right? You know, things like that happen in organic ways mostly, but also just, you know, sometimes military, sometimes geographic and droughts and things, people groups migrate and so forth. But what we're doing now is very different than that, in that we are forcing a grand experiment that's never been tried in the history of the world, where we're taking very different groups of people deep into the heartland in some places. You know, you could try to maybe parallel this with like the Jewish captivity or something, maybe, but it's not even close, because these are all kinds of people that are now not just, they're not even subservient. They are made, at least in theory, to be, have all the same privileges and status that you do. Even if your family was here for generations and fought in the wars and sacrificed to make this place as good as it is, now people who weren't part of that story, and who, let's say, don't have the values in their cultures to reproduce what's been produced here, now they are somehow expected to be on an equivalent footing in every single way, and get the benefits that you've worked hard for. They're going to get the Social Security. You don't think it's happening? I was just in Los Angeles in January. There was a billboard and it said on it in Spanish that we'll get the documents for you, even the ones that are hard to get. And there's a picture of a Social Security card. It's happening. It's not a myth. And people who don't live in those areas think it's not happening. It totally is. I got to stop. I'm on a rant. okay. So now Doug Wilson's the discussion. I didn't mean for him to be the discussion in the chat group here. But yeah, I just noticed him and who was it? One of the other guys on Cross Politic. I can't remember. Those guys have some good takes. I'm not saying it's, you know, I'm generally positive about their takes and stuff, but this was, it was just, trying to kind of frame the anti-white stuff as like, it's really just anti-Christian. And it's like, I mean, it's anti-God, I suppose, but it's when you look at the full picture of what CRT is, but I don't see it. I don't see it. I think there's definitely connections. Anyway, probably should wrap it up because I'm getting tired. It's almost 11. We're still streaming here. We have a number of people that are still in the comment section. And if I didn't answer your question, or you have a comment, feel free to leave a comment on YouTube and I'll do my best to get to it. Matt says we will have a 52-star flag if they win. I don't know what that's a reference to. Is that, what are the other two stars? Is that, like, was that D.C. and Puerto Rico? Clip that rant. Yeah, we'll clip it. There's definitely an Antichrist spirit at work, yes. All right, well, hey, on a positive note, because I always want to end on a positive note, let me just say this. There are people who are waking up to this stuff, left and right. And one of the things I was encouraged by in Wisconsin is I did share a presentation on liberalism, something I haven't shared in depth. It's going to be stuff that's part of the book. I'm not going to release this widely. It'll be unique to the book, but I did do a presentation on some of it. And there were people who came up to me and basically said the lights went on for them. They understand now. People who were against social justice, but they didn't quite get like why organizations like G3 had a problem with Christian nationalism, that kind of thing. And it's like they understood. And so I think that people, as time and experience take shape, and as we have more guys explaining the situation around us, that it's deeper than just wokeness. There is this liberal order that we're contending with. I think that some positive changes are coming. And you can see the beginnings of this in younger pastors that are, like think about it this way. TGC and T4G, these evangelical groups, Desiring God, even, you know, like Shepherd's Conference, these guys have all tried to raise up kind of like, they platform people that are like the young, hip, next generation guys, right? That are going to be the, you know, the star expositors and that kind of thing. And let me ask you this. When you look around you and you look at age, who are the big expository preachers that you listen to on the radio, on YouTube, or just even Christian thinkers? They're all older. They're all guys who are around before the woke stuff. Since the woke movement has been prevalent, who are the guys that seem to be making names for themselves? Or at least if they're not making the names for themselves, they're, people are looking to them for leadership. It's younger guys. And those younger guys are not in those circles. Those younger guys are, they tend to be more independent. The guys like, I'm thinking of like Zach Garris. I'm thinking of like Joel Webbin. I'm thinking of guys out in Ogden, Utah. I'm thinking about, you know, Andrew Isker. You know, these are all guys who are now gaining momentum as pastors and preachers and so forth. And they, you know, you wouldn't have known their names. It's and really their bravery, I think, shown through some of the things that happened in 2020, whereas other legacy ministries didn't have that kind of thing. And there's some changes coming, and some of them are positive. So, you know, that's in the Christian world. But I think even there's there's a sort going on, that people are moving to areas where they can share life with people who have similar values. And it'll look different in years from now. And it's also an adventure. It's like an exciting thing to watch. And we'll see what happens. I don't know. Are we on Calvinism now in the chats? What's going on? John is a Calvinist, someone says. Well, I'm not shy about saying that I do believe in the doctrines of grace, but not something I focus on lately as much. Barron Trump will pick the crown from the gutter. Yeah, some people, there's these theories about Barron Trump, like he's going to be the next, he's going to like be the Protestant Franco or something. It's, I don't know what it's based on exactly. Like little things like, oh, he plays war games, so he's going to be great. I'm like, what? Are you cool with that Joel Berry guy? Are you cool with him? I mean, I don't really know Joel. I think there's things he's posted that I haven't agreed with, but yeah, I'm cool with him today. Like he really appreciated my article, and you know, but there's things he posted I totally agree with. So I don't know enough about Joel, to be quite honest with you, to answer that question well. Someone said, if you make pagans follow God's laws, even if they do not believe, then yes, we can't make someone believe, but we can make them follow God's word. Amen. Third use of the law. Late show tonight, Pastor Edwin Ramirez. Oh, Edwin. It's good to see Edwin in the chat. The Proverbial Life. He's got a YouTube channel, too, if you want to check it out. You know, he's another guy, too. You know, that you know, young pastor to follow here, who's independent and brave. And like these are the kind of guys that I'm telling you that I hear more about now. All right. Last thing I got to announce it. Sorry. I just will say this though. I will be posting the sessions from both those conferences soon. So follow me on social media and you'll see them soon. God bless. Have a good night. Bye now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.